It's your good friends, and I might drive you around the bend. But I'm sure it's crazy kids will work it out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
Hello, and welcome to the big show. We're doing it right out of the gate here, and we've got a special guest today. Of course, I'm Jack Shepherd.
Jack, can I quickly stop down real quick?
Perfect. That's great. This is actually great. This is what I was hoping would happen.
Start of the show. I know you did the counting and you're like, oh, let's all prepare, like make sure that our recorders are prepared.
And was yours?
No, I wasn't recording. Okay. I am now.
Yeah. Okay.
But I missed all of the counting.
Okay, perfect.
Do you want to count again?
Let's count to six. One.
Okay. Two.
Three.
Four.
Five.
Six.
Okay.
I got that. Now that's on tape.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Tanner, I think it's really nice that you helped me practice counting. I wouldn't have to do it live.
I do that for
time.
The guests. You know, whenever we have guests on, I like really play nice. This like sort of buffoonish idiot who like can't turn on his recorder. But
that, so in Victorian times, it was considered polite for the hostess to spill wine on the tablecloth first.
Yeah.
To make her guests feel comfortable. So you're just like that.
Why do you know so much about the Victorian times? Are you a time traveler?
Yep.
That voice you hear, is our special guest. It's Vanessa Zoltan from the Hot and Bothered podcast. We were very lucky to have her. You've recommended a novel for us to read by one of our faves, the one who started it all, Tessa Dare.
I know. I should have gone farther afield for y'all, but...
Oh, no. This is right where we want to be.
It is One Dance with a Duke. Where true temptation begins at midnight.
One dance with a duke, but there's more than one dance with the duke, isn't there, in this one?
Hey, they do the horizontal mambo.
Okay, Tanner. I meant they actually do have a couple of other dances.
I got excited that you were going to stop halfway through that first word and say they do the hora. Like, what?
Are they Jewish?
I have a different edition.
I don't think I picked up on that.
He's the Duke of Midnight.
What a cool thing.
Spencer Moreland.
That's good branding. You know what? That's two lewd branding consultants. He doesn't even need us.
He doesn't need
us. We should be like taking his masterclass.
He's amazing at branding in general.
He is.
I want everyone to be scared of me, even though I'm a very nice man.
It's such a cool thing, too, to like take like mental illness, like severe crippling social anxiety, and like figure out how to brand it and turn it into something like... hip.
That's cool.
Do you alluring. Know how we could all do that? Millions how? Of dollars.
He does have millions of dollars.
But he's agoraphobic or anoclophobic.
What's the second one mean? Afraid of?
Afraid of being in a large
horses?
Crowd.
Okay. I think that's, he's not an agoraphobe.
Yeah.
He likes being out on his horse.
He's an anoclophobe, which is fun. But I thought before we get into the plot of this, maybe...
Yes, thank you, Jack. You're right. Before we get into the plot of this, I would like to talk about something I learned on Dinosaur Train the other day.
Okay.
I was watching Dinosaur Train the other day.
Are you familiar with this, Vanessa?
I'm not.
It's
it's exactly what it says on the tin. It's, it's a TV show produced by Jim Henson, made for PBS, where a bunch of dinosaurs ride on a train to go to different periods in the... in prehistory to experience different kinds of dinosaurs. And what I learned on the Dinosaur Train was that it's not pronounced Ankylosaurus like you might think.
Ankylosaurus.
It's pronounced Ankylosaurus.
Yeah, I know that.
Like Kylo Ren.
I'm a dinosaur dad.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Like Kylo Ren. Yep. Yeah.
Jack didn't even need to watch Dinosaur
Train. No, I've watched all of Dinosaur
Train. Jack's seen it.
Oh, you know this from Dinosaur Train.
Yeah.
Wow. I need to watch this documentary.
Paleontologist Scott taught you that, huh, Jack?
Yeah, paleontologist Scott taught me that. I know my dinos. Yeah. We had a long dino phase. I have a four-year-old. So we watched all of Dinosaur Train. Why did you want to share that, Tanner?
Because
it sounds like a anoclophobe. Got it. Sorry, carry on, Vanessa. Yep.
I just found out that brontosauruses are real again.
They're back. Pluto's back.
They were my favorite.
Yeah.
And then they went away.
And they have two names now.
Oh, I didn't know that. But I just got told, no, you don't need to be sad that your favorite dinosaur isn't real.
We prematurely mourned the brontosaurus.
I'm waiting for Pluto to come back as a
Apatosaurus.
Panosaurus.
Thank you.
That's the other name for brontosaurus now. They brought it back, but they're like, you can't. We're bringing it back. You cannot call it a brontosaurus anymore.
That's them. They're just saving face. They're like,
but you know what, guys? I'm a rebel. Yeah. I'm calling it a brontosaurus.
I'm calling it a brontosaurus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? You hear this all the time. You hear this little factoid from the DNA molecule in Jurassic Park. And he says, thunder lizard. Tyrannosaurus right. Rex means thunder lizard, right?
No, not really.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't Rex mean king?
Yeah, Rex means king. Tyrannosaurus.
You know what means
king.
Thunder lizard?
Saurus means lizard.
Brontosaurus okay. means thunder lizard.
There we go. Okay.
Oh.
That's right.
My
that's
dog agrees with you. She's like, duh, Vanessa, you're embarrassing yourself. Okay, I get it.
I'd love to try to steer us back on track here.
Please do.
And I thought that we could start with a quick name generator.
Yes.
And the name generator that I want to start with is... What is your... Saucy Duke name.
Oh, Saucy Duke name. Interesting.
So this
okay.
Duke, the Duke in this novel, and we will describe it, but he's called the Duke of Midnight. And it's because yes. his thing, which is, I've got to admit, is pretty cool, is that like he doesn't ever want to be at parties. He doesn't want to go to parties, but he feels like he has to because he's a very rich duke. And so he only shows up at the stroke of midnight and dances with one lady and then leaves. And it's very cool. And it's the talk of the town. Everyone like counts down until midnight. I think the way that we can do this name generator and get our own cool duke name is just say what you would be doing generally on a regular day at midnight. If you're not asleep.
Okay. If you're not asleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can go first if you guys need
can
it.
Can I ask a few quick questions?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Preparing for sleep, off the table, on the table.
If you want to be the Duke of preparing for sleep, you can, but it's
like Duke of brushing my teeth. Or...
Do you think, here's how I want you to do this in your mind.
Yeah.
There are a certain number of nights that are normal nights. When you're awake at midnight.
Sure.
You know, there are weird nights when you're awake at midnight. Sure. You're taking a late flight or like somebody's robbing your house or whatever.
Yeah.
But there are normal nights when you're just awake at midnight. Yep. What's the most likely scenario? That's what
mine.
I think. Okay. So if it's brushing your teeth, that's fine. Okay, Vanessa, let's you're the Duke of
anxiety budgeting.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Those two terms that you just used together could not be further apart in my mind. If I am anxious, the last thing I'm doing is thinking about budgeting.
No, but I am anxious.
In fact, budgeting and money is the reason I'm anxious.
Exactly. So I am moving numbers around because I'm anxious, trying to deal with the fact that I'm anxious. This makes total sense to me, Tanner.
It's nice that you channel anxiety into an extremely useful task that most
of
us will be putting
You
off.
Also, like, I would prefer to be vacuuming, but the rest of my family thinks that's rude if I do that at midnight. But anxiety budgeting you can do quietly.
Okay, that's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm the last thing I'm going to be doing is thinking about a budget when I'm anxious at midnight.
Tanner, I feel judged right now. I don't feel supported at all.
Good.
Also, yeah. I appreciate that you don't care about gender norms, but I would prefer to be the Duchess of anxiety budgeting.
Yeah,
if you
that's
don't
fair
mind.
Enough. Yeah,
thank
Duchess,
you.
The just, Duchess of anxiety budgeting. And if folks, if you're playing along at home, you can choose whatever you like.
Yeah, obviously. I just
title wise. Yeah.
I'm just a Duchess. It's just how I am.
Because I'm not thinking about money and budgeting at midnight. Yeah. I'm usually doing everything I can to avoid thinking about that, which involves. Imbibing illicit or less illicit intoxicants and watching YouTube videos. So I would be the Duke of watching YouTube videos about the time period between 1.8 and 0.8 billion years ago in the middle of the Proterozoic eon.
That's okay. It's not catchy.
It's not.
I didn't say it was catchy.
Nobody
just
nobody
said it's my name.
Sure. I'm just saying that the gossip
You don't think that's
going
to win me like any like young harlots at the dance?
That's all I'm saying. I appreciate your honesty. I just don't think the broadsheets are going to be like, do you know who was at the ball last night? The Duke of the guy
Listen,
who stoned
It's called the Boring
YouTube.
Billion.
I'm just I'm not criticizing.
It's the dullest time in Earth's history.
I'm happy.
A billion
for you.
Years where nothing happened.
I think it sounds great. I'm just saying that you're not going to get the media coverage that you're looking for. That's all. I'm trying to manage your expectations.
You know what? If that turns people off, I didn't want them in my
lives
anymore.
Totally. They don't deserve you.
I need someone who will watch documentaries about the most boring billion years in Earth history.
I want
me.
That for you.
I'm the Tanner Jack. You taught me a term for when you stay up later than you want to because you feel like you didn't have the kind of day you wanted to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that called?
I don't remember. Is it revenge insomnia?
Revenge insomnia, something like that. Anyway, that's what I'm always doing.
Something along those lines. Jamie taught me that term.
Isn't it regret insomnia?
You never really regret it. I mean, you regret it because you're sort of like on week 100 of not getting enough sleep.
Sure.
But so this is most nights for me, but it's a very specific thing. I am the Duke of falling asleep, watching a documentary about failures at sea while clutching something like half a pint of wine in my left hand like it's a life preserver.
Yeah.
I tell you what, man, we don't even need any of these like young debutantes.
Yeah.
You guys have because
we've found one another. You know?
It's like the worst ball world. In Regency history.
So now I really want to ask you about which books about failed sea voyages you've read, but that's another podcast that I would like to be on.
I've read a bunch.
Is Nathaniel Philbrick your fave?
I read Explorer ones.
Oh my God, they're so good. These are some of my favorite things to read. But let's... I also love romance novels. I love romance novels.
Yes, we read a whole one.
Yeah, I love them.
We read a whole one.
We did. We read a whole one. Yeah.
One Dance with the Duke. Here's what we normally like to do. It's part of the Stud Club trilogy.
It is.
Which is fun. I
pee freely. And it's the segment where we talk about how Tessa Dare stole the name of the Stud Club from us. It's the name of our club, Jack.
Okay, I didn't know it, but I'm...
It's a two-person club. It's me and you.
I'm not
and
invited.
Tessa Dare stole it. And, sorry, it's a three-person club.
Yeah.
We have a newly minted member,
yeah.
Vanessa.
Yay.
And it's the Stud Club. And we breed horses like the guys in this one, or...
No.
Yeah.
We all wear stud earrings. No hoop earrings here. Yeah. No dangly earrings. They're bad for podcasting.
We do love to say what happened in a book.
Okay.
Hard to clip out in like a Photoshop, you know? If you're trying to like separate someone from their background, a dangly earring is a little tough. Go ahead, Jack.
Thank you. Historically, we do it in 90 seconds. Vanessa, would you like to do the honors for us? Do you think you can describe this novel in 90 seconds?
Well, I've been training for this my whole life.
Okay, perfect.
The whole book, 90 seconds. I should set a timer.
I set a timer.
You set a timer.
Jack will time you.
So we need you... Just entirely laser focused on this.
Yeah,
we don't want
and he's merciless.
To be worried
you
about
go
the timer.
A second over.
I'm not afraid of him. I love a boundary.
You really shouldn't be.
I'm the Duchess of Anxiety Budgeting, y'all. You think I don't love a boundary?
I'd say what I'm the Duke of, but it's too long to say. Okay, please describe this whole novel, One Dance with the Duke, in 90 seconds, beginning now.
So Amelia's poor and she's sort of on the shelf, but she wants to get married and she's very attached to her family. She has a ne'er-do-well brother named Jack who has a gambling addiction, and she meets the Duke of Midnight who holds debts for her brother, and she goes up to him and he does not want to dance with her, and she's like, just forgive my brother's debts, okay? And he's like, no. And then he starts having a panic attack, so he pulls her out onto a terrace, and then these other men are like, we're all in the Stud Club and one of the members of the Stud Club has died, you have to come with us. And he goes with them, and they're like, who killed this other member of the Stud Club? And in the meantime, he's like, Amelia, you're hot. And so in that first night, he's like, we should get married. And she's like, no. And then he kisses her and she's like, yeah. And so then they do sort of a marriage of convenience thing, but with some attraction. They gamble a little. He seduces her slowly. In the meantime, they move out into the country. Her brother, Jack, comes to visit. Can I have a time check? In the
60 seconds.
Oh my.
30 seconds more.
Okay. And Jack is like, I need more money. And the Duke husband is like, you have to choose between the two of us. And she's like, I can't choose. You can't make me choose against my brother. And he's like, by the way, I have a ward and she's pregnant. And Amelia is like, I think that you should be a better, you know, guardian. And she runs away. She gives Jack some money. Also, there's some drama with a horse. A horse gets shot. Oh, no. And then they realize she gets rid of Jack and he's a better warden, a better guardian. And they fall in love and they dance at midnight.
And time.
That was very good.
I'm sorry he's such a tyrant.
No, I love I like that about him. I got one thing wrong. They don't dance at midnight. They dance at like 12:03.
Yeah, it's fun at the end.
Yeah, it's cute.
They're like waiting. They're waiting for him to show up at midnight, and you think that's how it's going to end. But he's a little bit late.
And she's like, "Why are you late?" And he's like, "Oh, my ribs." It's very cute.
Yeah,
it's like that.
Yeah,
but sexy.
He like cracked his ribs.
The Duke of 12:03 doesn't sound great, but I don't think any of us are in a position to call people out on their Duke names.
Yeah, Jack would be the Duke of 12:06.
Okay. Tanner's worked out.
Jack
exactly
is 6 minutes late to literally everything.
How late I always am.
It's always 6 minutes.
You were on time for us tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know what, Jack? You were.
Yeah.
There goes my hero. Watch him as he goes.
I got an email today that Foo Fighters merch is on sale.
Oh, perfect.
If you're looking.
Are you a Foo Fighters fan? Why else would you get that email?
Who's not a Foo Fighters fan? Introduce me to this lost soul.
Good point.
Thank you.
Good job. That is the book. You did do the entire book.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah, y'all don't even need to read it now.
He had to shoot his horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was going to say, Tessa Dare murdered a number of people in order to make this happen. And I like Tessa Dare, but I didn't love this.
Jack is a walking didthedogdie.com.
Yeah.
Like, if an animal dies in a piece of media, Jack is immediately just like,
don't watch Twister.
I'm out.
Jack.
Okay. Thank you. That's actually
the 1996 film Twister.
It's been on my list since 1996 because I just missed it. Yeah. It was a big sensation.
Yeah.
And it didn't occur to me to ask whether the dog dies in it. So one of these days I was going to watch Twister and now I'm not.
Don't. A cow so dies
too.
We recently watched it. The dog does not die. The dog survives.
It just whips by in the tornado, but then it survives?
A cow does die.
Does the dog survives?
Wait, which dog?
There's a dog at the beginning when
the
baby Helen Hunt. I haven't seen this since 1996, so my memory.
Well, I just recently rewatched it.
Doesn't baby Helen Hunt fall in love with storms by watching one from like a shelter and a dog whips by? Am I making that up?
I think you're conflating a few things. It's a cow that whips by.
I thought a dog. Doesn't a dog get sucked out of the room or something?
That's Wizard of Oz.
No, thanks.
You might be right.
I think you might be right. Jack.
I think they're running for their storm shelter.
I'm
going to
believe Vanessa
make it.
Out of the two of you, frankly.
Yeah.
Okay, can I just say, in defense of Tessa Dare, no animals are harmed on the page. You don't have to, like, no one gets murdered on the page at all. You get told about it later. You don't have to, like, witness
it. They murder.
It.
Right. Her blood is all
they
over his
murder.
Body.
A beautiful
horse.
What do you call a female horse?
It was
horse?
A mercy killing. No, it's a girl. Because she's in love
Yeah,
with,
it's a girl.
Yeah.
It's
Tanner didn't read the
Juno
book.
Is the name of the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Tanner is right. So essential part of the plot is that he wants to win this horse. And the reason that he's so desperate to win the horse is it's the only horse that can gentle his mare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a euphemism. It's just literally the thing.
Yeah.
It's sweet. And it humanizes him.
Yeah.
Until he shoots the mare. But like
because the mare Gomes broke.
As soon as I learned that fact, I was like, okay, this is the romance. The romance of this book is Juno and Osiris, the horses. I cannot wait until these horsies get together in the end.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking forward to. And the thing I like about romances is that they always have a happy ending. And so you never need to worry. I was completely taken by surprise when Tessa was like, I'm gonna kill the horse as just to get her out of the way.
No. It wasn't a good
And then of course it's like Romeo and Shakespeare or it's like Romeo and Juliet. Because as soon as Osiris figures out that what's her name?
Are you talking
Juno? It's a real mixing of mythologies.
Greek myths, but. Yeah,
and that's why I was so confused.
Yeah,
sure,
yeah.
That's why he was so confused.
As soon as Osiris figures out that Juno has been killed by Duke Moreland,
yeah, he takes poison, doesn't he?
He takes poison and kills
in
himself
in a tomb.
Oh my God. So then it turns out that Juno wasn't really dead.
She wakes up from the shooting.
Yeah.
It's a mess. But we're supposed to not care about
that. She's like 50 Cent.
I think we are. I think we're supposed to be heartbroken by that.
And she kills a man,
he's
too.
He's pretty devastated.
Tessa kills a man, too. A man named Leo.
Completely off the page. It happens before the book even starts, Jack.
But we have to watch his deaf sister.
Yes.
Is
right.
Grieving.
Is grieving. Yeah. The book opens with a grieving. It's like, this is, I think, some of the saddest stuff I've seen. You've read a lot more romances than I have, Vanessa, but we've read about 15 so far. Not you, Tanner. You've read literally exactly the same number of romances as I have.
I'm so sorry I introduced you to a sad romance.
No, we loved it.
Writes a lot of sad romances.
Have you read this entire trilogy?
No, I haven't. I don't care about the annoying one. I've read the hot army guy's one. I don't remember names, I'm sorry.
The older brother?
One who falls in love with the death sister.
Ashworth and Bellamy.
Yeah, Bellamy. Don't give a shit about Bellamy. That guy. Not going to read his book.
We've got a hot segment
Bellamy's
for
a
this,
wiener.
Okay. If I may.
Please.
It's called Let's Guess What Happens in the Sequels.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, good, because I haven't read the Bellamy one.
So the stud club, and not our one, and this is going to be confusing for listeners. There are two stud clubs. There's one, it's Tanner, Vanessa, and Jack.
Yeah.
But that's, from here on out, we're mostly going to be talking about the stud club that's from this book.
Yeah.
And it's called the stud club because they breed horses, unlike us.
Yes.
Right. Ours is called the stud club because
we're hot. You
know, we're hot people.
We can't help it.
And so there's going to be more stud clubs. So, but the stud club is these guys, and they don't like each other at the beginning of this, but I get a sense that they're going to be friends. And it's Ashworth and Bellamy.
Yeah.
And
power rankings. Who's the sexiest? Number one, Ashworth.
Ashworth.
Number two, Moreland. Number three, distant number three, Bellamy.
Yes.
Well, so this is, so Ashworth, his thing is, it's a very romance novel thing. He's Ashworth the Indestructible. Here's the thing he says when he's first introduced. Too young? All the wrong men die young. Swearing, Ashworth kicked the Ottoman. Worthless devils like me? Now we're damn near indestructible. This guy can't die, but he kind of wants to.
He can't die. Yeah.
He's given up on wanting to die, though. He's like, why even bother wanting to die?
He's given up on it. Why bother? He needs to find somebody, I think, to make him not so sad all the time anymore.
Yeah. Survivor's guilt.
So that's your prediction?
Well,
he's book two?
That's one. I have one other guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. I've got two other guesses. The other one is
how about a million guesses?
Bellamy. I'm trying, so Bellamy's the other guy.
Yeah.
Here's the passage with Bellamy.
He's sort of the dork. He's like a Dorcas.
He's the president of the frat.
But like,
bad vibe.
He's like too into the rules of the stud club, and he's like, they have these stupid rules. It's like, you can't, I don't even know.
No.
But like,
I'm going to say something that makes it sound like I'm more into frats than I am. But like, he is the president of the frat, but he's not cool enough to be in a frat. You know?
Oh, yeah. See, I think in college, people thought he was cool. I think that that's the thing about him, right? He has like this hairstyle that everyone in London is emulating.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he is sort of he's like a king. He's like a tastemaker.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's the president of the frat and cares a lot about being president of the frat and is like 30 and is still wearing his frat sweatshirt.
You're right.
And you're like, dude. Ugh.
I just know him from this book, and to me, he reads as like Dorcas. Yeah. Like, he's a very unpleasant.
He's my least favorite of the stud club.
Sucks.
Yeah, my power rankings are Ashworth, then the one dance Moreland. With the Duke, Spencer.
Yeah.
Spencer Moreland, and then this guy, Bellamy.
That's the correct ranking.
But here's a passage that makes me think he's going to be in a sequel. Just as well, then, Amelia said, hoping that her friend did not return the man's affections. Nothing good could come of such a match. Lily was a refined, delicate lady from one of England's most noble families. Julian Bellamy was a hellraiser of indiscriminate origins.
Okay. I know what the origins is. That's funny you say that, Tessa Dare, because some of us have researched the Hellraisers, and we know exactly what their origins is, and it's the Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a world of infinite pleasure, pain that exists kind of, I think, between our world and the next, and you can access it when you open the lament configuration box, which you shouldn't, absolutely shouldn't.
And David Bowie
So I think
there.
She's going to do a Hellraiser.
So he's a Hellraiser.
Yeah. Now that's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I think Jack and the young ward, Caroline, is that her
Claudia.
Name? Claudia.
Yeah.
Will be book two.
Yeah, so brother Jack is he needs to be redeemed.
I think he goes off to America and we never hear from him again. That's my prediction.
Oh, I think she goes with him and they become like...
Well, she doesn't,
but she doesn't,
doesn't go with him.
Fun. Did you not finish the
book? No, I think she will end up going with him. She will end up going with
she'll
him.
She'll
go
to find him.
Like a,
I want better
they
for
cool,
her.
Like, they'll both be like mass holes.
She deserves better than this like...
He's cool.
He's a manipulative little shit.
he's got a gambling addiction.
Sure,
but
that is fine.
He wanted to make her into an ominous woman, sort of.
Is this going
to
be the end of the stud club? We're fighting already.
I think that fighting and getting back together is what makes us a true club.
Yeah, it's true of those dudes, too. Ashworth and Spencer Moreland are constantly having this like funny interchange where Spencer's like, are we friends? And Ashworth is
like
we're not enemies. And it's
and
like, all right, guys.
Are
like,
you
fucking
like,
working
kiss,
out.
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, is that your prediction? It's Moreland and Ashworth?
No. I mean, that's my fantasy. That's not my prediction. Ashworth is by far the hottest. My favorite thing about Ashworth is that night that they're like waiting to find the body of the dead brother slash member of the stud club. And Ashworth is the only one who still naps and snacks. I'm like, relatable, Ashworth. Me too. And Amelia's like, it's probably from his time at war. He knows that you should always be rested and well fed. And I'm like, I've never been to war, but I know that too.
He's probably also anxiety budgeting.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I've got some downtime. I'm pretty stressed out, but I'm going to make use of it in a good way.
He's like a new lord, you know? Like,
yeah,
he's got
it.
Some like
he has a lot of
financial
stress budgeting
stuff
to
figure
to do.
Out. Yeah.
House is quiet. I'm going to cut up an apple. I'm going to take a 20-minute nap, and then I'm going to do some budgeting. Me and Ashworth. Yeah. Thank you for being happy for us. We're very happy together.
Let's take a very quick break and then continue to discuss this fascinating, scintillating novel.
Perfect. I have to go potty. So
okay,
perfect. Timing couldn't be better.
Great.
I have to look up Dinosaur Train.
And now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Hey everybody, it's Evil Jack here, and I have some bad news to share, which is that the evil BetterHelp competitor that Evil Tanner and I started, WetterHelp, which offers all the same services as BetterHelp, except 100% soggier, is going under, both literally and figuratively. Unfortunately, a lot of the therapists we tried to work with, despite being licensed counselors who you would expect to be some of the most understanding people in the world, were actually extremely rude and unforgiving about how damp their contracts were when it came time to sign, and a lot of our clients expressed a surprising amount of dissatisfaction with their sessions, despite the fact that we went above and beyond to ensure that each interaction was as quaggy, mushy, squelchy, moist, and waterlogged as we could manage within the constraints of a small business. Also, our offices are sinking. All of this is, of course, causing me and Evil Tanner a good deal of stress, anxiety, grief, LGBT matters, and self-esteem, which means that we are going to have to make use of some of the many licensed therapists at BetterHelp, despite the fact that they don't have a 100% moistness guarantee, and their counselors insist on conducting some of the most bone-dry therapy sessions you could imagine. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you should definitely give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. At the moment, we are sadly unable to offer you the squelchy, sopping alternative that WetterHelp was really starting to be known for, so I guess you're just going to have to do it the old-fashioned way and call your therapist from the shower, or ideally, some kind of bog. If you've got some things you really want to get off your chest, just fill out a brief questionnaire at BetterHelp to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. But if you want the soaking of a lifetime, well, I guess you're just going to have to stand next to a puddle and wait for a bus to drive by, because apparently there's no room in this country for entrepreneurs anymore.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/bedfellows today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/bedfellows.
And we're back. And what else? What have we not said about this novel yet? There's a lot to say.
Oh, so many things, Jack.
The most important one.
Yeah.
Is the way that he seduces her.
Yes.
So yes. He, okay, she, yes. Wedding night is like, yeah. Don't want to have sex with you yet. And he's like, I respect that. Very love in the time of cholera. Super into it. And so he seduces her by gambling with her.
Yeah. They play strip PK.
Yeah, good old. They place wagers. She's like, if I win, you have to pay off my brother's debt. And he's like, great. If I win, you got to sit on my lap naked.
Yeah.
And it's very sexy. But then it's very sweet because she like loses on purpose because she wants a hug.
She wants a hug. It's so nice.
Yeah.
I was so touched by that. I was genuinely touched by that.
Right? Like
when, but he's bad at that. He's bad at it. Because as soon as he starts hugging her, he's like, oh, I'm so horny. Like, let's do sex.
He's like, oh, she's doing it wrong. She went in for the kiss and she like leaned too far. This is so awkward. And then he's like, wait, what are these arms around my back? What is this feeling I'm feeling? And then it's like, oh, that's it. There's another way of relating to someone. This is not,
oh, it's affection.
It's affection. Yeah. He's never tried it, but he likes it.
It's so dear.
It's beautiful. Yeah, there's a lot. This is the like, this novel is the stripteasiest novel. It's like, it's a striptease. Like, we haven't come across this specific thing. There's a lot of, like, I'm calling it a procrastinated assignation, where it's like,
Or seduction,
Or seduction, where it's like the mechanism is that they are about to do it and they don't, and they're about, and that's common in romance novels, but this one they really like, Tessa portions it out via this striptease mechanism where it's like the first night it like, and it's only a 10 minute, where only
there's a
rules
timer.
Of the wager are that it's only for 10 minutes and it seemed like it was gonna get hot and heavy, but we're both like super committed to this bit and like
it's like you with your 90 second recap.
Exactly. But there's also like the emotional striptease where like he he's like slowly revealing himself over like really slowly, slower than most dudes.
Yeah.
Like normally there's like they take a while to let their boundaries down, but he's just like, I'm an asshole, I'm the Duke of Midnight, and it takes a very long time before he actually lets her in at all.
And like most people, he does it by the horse way in.
The horse way in. That's the best way to do it. Yeah.
That's how my husband and I did it.
Here's me. Here's who I am. I'm into horses. Yeah.
Yep. Third date, Peter took me out and was like, see how I love this horse? I might love you like that one day. And I was like, okay.
Why are you taking me to a horse barn? Just watch how much I'm nice to this horse.
We live in the middle of a city. Are you going to murder me out here?
What should I do to this horse?
I just want you to see me be nice to a horse.
It's like,
it works on all the ladies.
It's save the cat, but be nice to a horse. I was just going to say another thing that I really love about this book is that he values her crafting.
Yeah, he really likes her crafting.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole scene. She is a, what do you call it?
Needlepoint. She does needlepoint.
Needlepoint.
She does needlepoint.
She does needlepoint.
Or embroidery.
And he... Yeah. She's like Pinhead. And that's how Pinhead got all his pins. And then she's like, oh, I did this shitty needlepoint. It sucks. And he's like, that needlepoint is never going to adorn a pillow in my house for as long as I live. And she's like, okay, this dude hates my needlepoint. But the truth is, he doesn't hate her needlepoint. He loves her needlepoint. It's so beautiful. It's a work of art.
Yeah.
And he's like, this
so
won't
he wants
be practical.
To hang it on the wall of the, it belongs in a museum.
Yeah. He's like, no ass is going to sit on this. Eyes will gaze upon it. I just think that
you want people to toot on this?
Part of what romance novels are instruction manuals that women are writing to men as to how we want to be loved. And I'm not a big crafter.
Is that true?
Yes, which is why it's brilliant that you all are reading these, because most straight cis men don't read these. So you guys are ahead of the curve. But one of the things that I feel like a lot of women want is for men to love their crafts.
Okay.
Yes.
And so
all right.
that's in the instruction manual here.
Try to figure out how to take that on board.
Mm-hmm. What's Sarah's craft?
I mean, she's
a writer. She's got a sewing machine.
Does she sew?
Well, she's... Well, no. Her craft... Sorry.
No, but you're right.
She's going to listen to this, so she's going to be annoyed that I went to the literal crafting that she has just started.
No, but that's what we were talking about.
And not her actual craft, which is that she is a very gifted writer.
No. But we were talking about crafting in the arts and crafts way. She won't get mad at you. She's too smart for that. She'll be like, Vanessa, why did you shame Jack by doing that? I'm sorry, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you for bailing me out there. I appreciate
Jimmy
it.
Jimmy doesn't play World of Warcraft.
She doesn't play World of Warcraft.
I feel like I'm at a loss for what her craft would be.
She's a writer too, Tanner.
No, I know, but she does that professionally.
Yeah, okay.
And I read everything she writes, of course. You know, but what's her passion?
So you got to be nice about the thing. But he does a bad job of it because he just like rips it away from her. And she's like, okay, I guess he didn't like it.
Yeah,
so
but he figures it out at the end.
He's not very good at
it. She later sees that he's like framed it in his bedroom.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And it's like, no, you're halfway there, dude. You rip it away from her by all means, but then say, because I want to frame it in my bedroom.
Yes, but he's the Duke of Midnight.
He suffers from social anxiety, though, you know? He's not good at this
stuff. Well, not only that, he was raised with so much privilege, he's never had to justify his actions to anyone before. He's just like, trust me, I'm awesome 100% of the time.
So what is wrong with this guy? So this is another trope that Tanner and I have picked up on, which is that there's like, it's often broken men who need to be fixed. And I think so far it's usually not the case on the other side of it. Like Amelia seems fine. You know, she's not like, she doesn't have the best life necessarily, but she's not horribly broke. Like Ashworth is so broken that like he needs to like get in punch fights in the hope that someone will kill him.
Yes.
And this guy like can't be in crowds and like, but it's also like, I can't quite figure out what it is that's broken about him.
Do you want me to get really like obnoxious about a theory?
Yes, please.
So first of all, Amelia does have real problems, right? She like severely underestimates her own self-worth and feels as though she is of worth if she is being useful to others, including constantly providing her brother Jack with funds, even though she knows he'll gamble them away. So I would say that she is, you know, she needs this unconditional love as well. She thinks that she has to be helpful in order to be loved. And he's like, you deserve unconditional love. And then I think patriarchy allows men's like anxieties or problems to codify because they are not pushed to correct themselves socially as much, right? Women are trained, especially in the Regency era, to make themselves as palatable as possible, whereas men just didn't have to. And I think that part of making yourself agreeable to the world is having to deal with your shit in order to empathize with others and be caring to others. And he just didn't have to do that. So that's why men suck more, because of patriarchy. It's not their fault. Everyone's a victim of patriarchy.
They're both equally broken, but he's never been forced in any meaningful way to have to change his behavior.
Yes.
And so he just acts like a fucking...
He had a pretty
weirdo.
Cherry gig where he just got to go to the woods of Canada.
Yeah.
To just sow his wild oats. He didn't have to worry about anyone out there, you know?
Except his horse.
And if he could have just stayed in the woods of Canada, he would have been fine. But no, society has forced him to come back and find a lover.
He's also a hopeless romantic. He's got Anthony Hopkins in Remains of the Day syndrome, where he's
You're
like
always quoting Anthony Hopkins in Remains.
I just read like this that book. Part of Have it. You read it?
I haven't read it. It's Kazuo Ishiguro,
yes.
Right? Yeah, I haven't read it. I've read enough of his stuff that like I need to really prepare myself because it's always like pretty,
so sad.
Like quietly devastating.
But if you've seen the movie, it's not devastating in a different way. But it's so good. It's so good. It is very sad.
I'm excited. I've got his new one. I'm excited about
reading
it.
Yeah, me too.
But he's like, this guy's like, he's like quietly reading Walter Scott novels. Like he gets caught reading, he's like an autodidact.
Yeah.
And he's like,
oh, yeah.
and he's reading Waverly, and but he's like persuaded himself that it's like he's reading it because it's a historical novel. And it's like a saucy romance, and like she calls him out on
that. Amelia's like, you love romance novels, and he's like, I would never.
I'm reading it for the history.
I love war and history, madam. And she's like, sure you do. It's like men love wrestling, not watching men, you know, tumble together. Sure.
I have a segment I want to introduce, Jack.
Okay. Yep.
It is called Welcome to My Red Room.
Okay. Why don't you explain this segment for the benefit of our guests?
Yes, I will explain this segment. Each week, we read a romance novel for this book, for this podcast. And Jack reads it with his eyes, and I read it with my ears.
Yeah.
Like some kind of modern sophisticate. And this week, I was sitting on the couch at my in-law's house. While my wife and sister-in-law and mother-in-law doted on me in the kitchen preparing Thanksgiving Day feast for me. And I sat on the couch listening to this horny book about two people who like to have sex. And I just want to read you a quick passage and sort of describe the atmosphere that I was as I was listening to it. Yeah. In my red room, and my playroom, my dark fantasy room, where I do all my secret sex stuff.
Yep. Leather straps. Got it.
She reached between them, unbuttoning his fall and small clothes with practiced skill. He cupped her breasts, teasing her nipples to peaks through the thin muslin as she freed him from his trousers, her cool, delicate fingers wrapped around his thick length, stroking him boldly. He reclined in the chair, reveling in the sensation. She was a quick study, his Amelia. She'd already learned just how he liked to be touched. And it goes on to be a pretty robust and horny sex scene. And the whole time I was literally lying down completely supine on a couch as everyone in my family worked to prepare me Thanksgiving Day feast. You know, obviously trying very hard not to get too into it.
Sure.
You know.
Listening to it on the speakers. Everybody's just like running around like, we burned the turkey.
Sorry, like, everyone. Sorry, everyone. Sorry. I just got to get through the book.
It's for work.
So that's my playroom this week. It's my in-law's house on the couch as everyone works to prepare me a Thanksgiving Day meal. And I'm sitting on the couch just sort of listening to horny audiobooks.
So just so you know, for like the last 300 years, women have been sitting in all sorts of places doing this, right? Like more recently on airplanes, trains, they are like sitting around turning themselves on in public places all the time.
That's interesting to know.
Seems
I just want you
illegal.
To know that. I don't think it is. I don't think that they found a way to regulate that yet. Maybe in Texas.
They will. They will. Yeah.
They will. They'll have neighbors calling in on each other.
So that's my playroom this week. That's where I was.
That's beautiful, Tanner. Thank you for sharing.
That's
that.
Where I was my horniest.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that episode of The Office where Phyllis is listening to 50 Shades of Grey while working?
Yeah.
No, but it's ripped from the headlines because I would absolutely listen to 50 Shades of Grey. That is work. What do you mean while I'm working?
We're the lucky ones.
This is so we have another segment that we like to do where we rate these novels on the Mohs scale of hardness.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one is a really easy one for me. I think it's one of the hornier books that I've read.
Okay.
Oh, my God. You're newbies.
I guess we are. I'm interested to hear what Tanner thinks, but this is like, for me, like, it's all the. I think it's like this striptease aspect of it where they're doing it like in parts where it's like, it's kind of like they'll do like the first part of doing it and then stop and then come back and do the next part of it and then like. Finally.
Oh, yeah. They sort of take like 6 months to finally like fully do sex.
Yeah. And so, like, that,
like a week,
that
but yeah.
build up. So we've got the Mohs scale, which is how you judge hardness. And I wrote down corundum, which is as hard as a masonry drill. Not familiar. I'm not familiar with it either, but it's apparently as hard as a masonry drill, which is a 9 on the most scale. Second only to diamond.
This one was pretty horny. It was pretty sexy. I would say it was. What's an 8 on the Mohs scale?
I don't know. Got to look it up.
Oh, I could have Googled it. I thought you just had it up.
An 8 is a...
You said had it up, and I did not make an erection joke. I just would like credit.
Thank you. That was, showed an incredible amount of restraint. Topaz.
Thank you.
I'd say it's somewhere between topaz and
quartz.
What was it, corundum?
Oh, corundum. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Learning a lot about these rocks. But this is so you, Vanessa. Kind of you don't think that this rates as like a particularly horny romance?
Where does it place you on the Mohs scale?
So I just think it's a very sexy romance, but I don't think it's a horny romance. Like I don't think it's not like there isn't a ton of explicit sex, right? It's about like the like long art of seduction. Whereas there
so what
are
you
books,
like? You're like a fluorite?
I'm like an opal. I don't know what's on the scale, but good. I feel like opal is like a soft rock.
Gem. Yeah.
A soft
you've
gem.
You've never heard two people frantically search opal hardness as quickly in your
you're
life.
Such
that's
good
a 5.5.
That you didn't...
It's a
that's
5.
A 5.5 to 6.5.
Okay,
that's
on the
good.
Mohs scale. That's great.
Yeah.
That
was are you impressed with how much I know about semi-precious stones?
Very good pull. Yeah, good
thank
job.
You. Yeah, I'm surprised at myself.
Okay, so a fairly horny book. Fairly horny.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty horny. There's like lots of horny. Sex scenes, and they do lots of pretty horny.
But there's a lot of interrupted sex, right? Like they're about to have sex against
that's
the
true.
Wall in the stable, and Jack walks in. They're about right, like yeah. It's not like them going at it like rabbits. Like, one day you all should read Francesca's book in the Bridgerton series, and that okay. is diamond. Like, that's just all sex okay. all the time.
We've read some pretty horny books.
We read one about these two ski dudes who, like...
Yeah, those guys were horny. Those guys never stopped having sex.
That was
sex.
The whole book.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Sounds exhausting.
It's also, in some ways, and I guess... I don't know if this is sexy or not, but it's also a novel about two people trying to figure out how to have a joint bank account after they get married.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. That is sexy as an anxious
sexy.
Budgeter. Yeah.
That's sexy. Like, they haven't, it like, is. We went through this. Like, I went through this with my wife. Like, at first we had separate bank accounts, and then at some point it made sense for us to not have separate bank accounts. And there was, you know, there's a lot of stuff in between that I won't describe in detail here, but it's pretty sexy just figuring out how to, you know, whether to go Bank of America or anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, don't turn me on.
Do you want to save this for Love in the Time of Horses?
Yeah, we'll save it. But like, a central tension of the novel is like, she's like, can you lend some money to my brother? And he's like, no, I won't. And then at some point she's like, you've got to, because your money is my money.
Yeah, I don't know whose side were you guys on in that argument.
I think here's where I'm at with that. It's always a massive flashing warning sign when somebody, a new person in a relationship, tries to separate their partner from their friends
from their family.
Or family. And in this case, the family that he is trying to keep her from is like a pretty bad guy and is dangerous. And in fact, when he lets Jack, the brother, in, the first thing he does is like off to Gretna Green with the ward. And like, you know, that's not great. But I didn't love it. So I kind of fell on her side.
What if it's inadvertent? What if you're like hanging out with your in-laws and they're like, Tanner, we're cooking you Thanksgiving dinner. Are you hard right now?
Yeah.
And that sort of like creates a little bit of a rift between
if they're the like if you were not married to Jamie but it was your first Thanksgiving with the family and they were like your new boyfriend didn't help at all. He just lay supine on the couch listening on our speakers on our Sonos
surround
speakers.
Sound
like
speakers,
we wanted to play like traditional music, but instead he insisted on playing.
I was hoping extremely... for a Bach passion.
Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah, in that case, like, yeah. Anyway, where did you guys land? I was on her side, I think. Like, you can't be like, we got married in a day, and now you can't see your brother anymore. Like,
I
even
think
if
it
he's
is
an asshole.
Very difficult to watch someone get taken advantage of by someone.
Yeah.
In a position like that, right? Like, her brother has a gambling addiction. And I think that there's a reason that there's, like, Al-Anon, right? Being yeah. loving someone who has an addiction or loving someone who has an addiction is really hard. And so I appreciate that he changes tactics and is like, I shouldn't have cut you off from him. But I also really understand that desire to be like, this guy is bad news for you.
He's bad news, yeah.
Right? And, like, he's constantly hurting you, and he's constantly betraying you, and he's dangerous because he's always in debt. And I just feel for both of them. I feel like addiction makes things really complicated.
He is a bad communicator. He's a bad communicator.
Yes, he's a totally Jack bad is. Communicator about it.
Yeah.
No, and Midnight. Spencer. Mr. Yeah. Midnight.
Oh, Spencer. Right.
But
Spencer sort of strikes me as, like, a bit of a... what was the dude from Jane Eyre, Rochester?
Rochester, yes. Yeah.
He's sort of like a Rochester type.
He's got Rochester sort of vibes.
He's a little bit of a prick.
Do you know, like, I just had a book come out. My book is called Praying with Jane Eyre.
Praying with Jane Eyre?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
So fight me about Rochester another time, Tanner.
Do you think he's a prick? He's a prick.
Are you pro-Rochester? Yes.
I'm very mixed about Rochester.
He kept his wife in the attic. It's unforgivable. It's unforgivable.
But even you that, like, he's like, just sort of like, he's just sort of a grump, and Spencer's a grump.
If you're like a brooding emo guy, and then, like, you have a dark secret, and your dark secret is like, you love your horses too much, like that's in this book, that's fine. But if your dark secret is you keep your wife in the attic, there's absolutely no coming back from it. There's no coming back from it, even if you're handsome.
I'm not going to fight you on the fact that it's a bad look. I'm just saying.
I'm excited to read your book. Tell me what the premise is specifically.
I'm treating sections. I am like an atheist chaplain, so I'm treating segments of Jane Eyre as if they're the liturgy that I'm preaching on.
That's awesome.
Instead of the Bible.
I love it.
You know, thanks. But yeah, I have very complicated feelings about Rochester. I'll just keep shameless plugging. It's all we talk about on this season of Hot and Bothered. This season's called On Air, where we're talking about Jane Eyre. And I think that the logic of the novel really wants you to believe that he is a man who saves women from bad situations, even when he doesn't need to, right? He saves Adele, even though he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Right. Like and so I think that the logic of the novel wants you to think that he's doing the right thing by not putting Bertha in an asylum.
Yeah, no,
but
totally.
But obviously he's a fucking monster.
It's crazy. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. That I think that's definitely right. Like the badness of Rochester is that he's like brooding and sad from the point of view of the novel. Not that he locked his wife in the attic.
Right. But I think it's really important to reckon with that
it's
now.
It's hard to look past it.
Yeah, totally.
Tanner, we have no minutes left, so I'll let you choose which segments that we must get through. No, this is great. Okay. This is a segment, Vanessa, where we talk about the burns in the book.
Did we warn you that you need to bring a burn?
No.
Okay, you need to bring a burn.
You have to bring a
sick burn.
You got to bring a sick burn.
The sickest burn you can find in the book. Jack will start to just kind of give you a little bit of a feel for the mood.
Okay.
Yeah. I should have brought more.
You really should have brought a burn. I don't know how you could have possibly known it since we didn't tell you to, but
I didn't know. I'm so sorry. I would have.
And for sex pots and
bed bugs. And sex bugs.
Yeah, sex bugs and bed pots.
We're still trying to figure out what to call our listeners. Do you have thoughts on it?
What do you call listeners on Hot and Bothered?
We're horrible about that.
Hotties? That's pretty good.
We should. Oh, yeah.
Hotties and naughties.
Those who we bother.
Hotties and naughties.
The people we bug.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a burn.
Yeah, please.
Okay. And Vanessa, you absolutely do not have to frantically search.
I'm looking for a burn.
Okay.
I will find a burn.
Tessa's good at him. She's got a good sense of humor.
She is really good at him, yeah.
Yeah, and Mr. Midnight hates Bellamy, so I'm going to find one.
Here's my burn. Spencer, she took one of his hands in hers. As we are bearing our secrets, I feel I should confess something. I may have been responsible for starting a most pernicious rumor about you, worse than any other. Oh, really? He asked, intrigued. Yes. Biting her lip, she gave him a doleful look. I may have told a group of impressionable young ladies that by the light of the full moon, you transform into a ravening hedgehog. He struggled to maintain a reproachful silence. She continued, Well, if it helps, I do regret it now. Do you? Oh, yes. It was an insult to hedgehogs everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's a burn on, I guess, that guy. Hedgehogs are very nice, actually.
Are they? Oh, you've met them. You went to a hedge convention.
I once went to a hedgehog convention.
Yeah.
I, for a time, had a very cool job at a major media company where I was the in charge of the animals section.
You did a lot of hedgehog journalism.
And so I was like, see you suckers later. I'm going to the hedgehog convention.
That's amazing. Have you read Lisa Kleypas's books? She's a lot of like... So wait until you get to Lisa Kleypas. She has a lot of characters who have unconventional pets. And hedgehogs feature in a big way.
Hedgehog people really, really love their hedgehogs. There's like, well, I mean, maybe that's not all hedgehog people, but the hedgehog people who go to the hedgehog convention, these people love their hedgehogs. They're big fans of their hedgehogs. It was very sweet.
That doesn't surprise me.
They call them hedgies. Yeah.
Speaking of Jack, actually, what you've done accidentally is you've introduced a new segment, which is Girth Check.
Okay, it's called Girth Check. How long that
How long that dong? I suspect what she's doing is by saying that she has called him the what was the quote?
That he transforms into a ravening hedgehog.
Yeah, so what I suspect what she means is that he has a penis about roughly the size of a hedgehog's.
Gotcha.
And I Googled that.
They're ickle. They're teeny weeny. They're pretty cute.
They're teeny weeny.
They're penises.
Yeah, teeny weeny weenies. Yeah. Okay. So you looked it up, though.
I Googled it. I Googled it. And I ended up on heavenlyhedgies.com on a page titled, The Hedgehog Penis, : Structure, habits, and disorders.
Okay, perfect.
Just to try to get to the bottom of like how, you know, like what are we working with?
Yeah, what are we working with here?
We're Bingus Butchers.
Yeah.
Are you worried about what the NSA thinks about your Google search history?
I think we gave up on that. I think we're in like a special like folder in the NSA like database where it's like they must have a podcast. Like,
yeah.
Why are they searching hedgehog penis size like frequently, you know?
Yeah.
So what?
I read this entire article about hedgehog penises. They actually don't ever quote the size of a hedgehog penis. I think they don't have particularly notably long penises.
Yeah.
In fact, I suspect just from reading this article that the hedgehog penis is often referred to as a hedgehog navel because it's sometimes confused with a belly button.
Just to kind of give you... They have innies and outies.
So hedgehogs do not have particularly large penises.
Okay. Thank you for doing the research.
Yep.
You're welcome. Doing the work. That's called doing the work.
That's God's work.
Yep. Yep.
Should I read my burn?
Yeah, read your burn.
Give Vanessa a little more time.
Yeah.
Yep. But I'm honing in, so I don't... I appreciate it. It's like y'all are ordering first at the restaurant, because I'm like, oh. I was trying to make the waiter...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was telling them about my wedding plans, and they didn't even look. I'm so sorry. Order slowly, Tanner.
That has not been my purpose, I assure you. But I will answer your question honestly. I wish to produce an heir as quickly as possible. I have no inclination to court, flatter, or otherwise woo some silly young chit scarcely half my age. Neither do I have the patience to engage the hand of a grieving woman who will be in mourning for the next year. Dowries are of no importance to me. I simply need a sensible woman from suitable bloodlines, of robust constitution, and even temperament, with whom to create a few children. Amelia stared at him in horror. You want a broodmare? He said evenly. When you draw that comparison, you demean us both. I have many fine mares in my stables, and yet there is not one of them I would allow to mother my children or manage my household, much less introduce my cousin to society. No, I do not want a broodmare. I want a wife, a duchess. And it's a burn on, I guess, non-horses.
It's a burn on, I mean, most of this book is a burn on non-horses. And it's,
yeah,
the novel is, I'll remind you, it's a tragedy about two horses who met when they were foals.
Star-crossed lovers.
Juno, the horse, when she was a foal, met Osiris, the horse.
Right, and we're not going to get into the...
And he was the only horsey who could make her happy. And when she was around him, she was happy. But then, I'm describing this whole novel. We should have done it at the beginning.
Yeah. You're doing great.
But then Osiris was taken away, and Juno was treated very badly, incredibly badly. She was mistreated by her owners until she became a temperamental mare and then fell into the hands of someone called the Duke of Midnight. And then he was like, don't worry, I'll get your friend back for you, and everything's going to be okay. And then he shoots her
in the head.
And that's what this book is about. He shoots her in the head.
Y'all are exhausting.
I promise you, I'll find your lover.
It's a sad one. Don't read this one if you like horses.
Oh, my God.
We love this one. Okay. We did like this book.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, you found a burn. Impressive.
You got your burn?
Yep. I would like the veggie burger and fries. Okay. So, for context, this novel starts with Amelia planning a menu. And then within, like, she takes, like, creating amazing meals to be, like,
She's got a summer home she's excited to visit.
Yes, but she loves preparing delicious meals. And then she sends off her husband and Ashworth to catch salmon. So Amelia has planned a meal. Ashworth and Midnight have caught the salmon. And at one point, Claudia says, when are you going to realize that I'm not a child? And they're eating the salmon at a dinner party. And Moreland says, eat your salmon. And she says, I am not going to eat the dreaded salmon. And the reason I picked this is because it is an insult to the cook.
Yeah.
It's an insult to Amelia for planning the meal. It's an insult to the Duke who caught the salmon. And it's an insult to the
to
salmon.
The salmon. It's a rare quadruple burn.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not going to eat the salmon.
You bring that kind of heat to our podcast? A quadruple burn?
Yeah.
I did. Y'all flirted with the waitress for me for so long. I had to really bring something big. Tanner showed her a lot of leg.
I believe that's all the time we have for today. Tanner, do you agree?
Oh, wait, I have more notes.
Okay, perfect.
What is your... horse club name?
Okay, it's another name generator.
Oh, that's fun.
We started with a name generator, we're going to end with a name generator.
Bookend it.
Their one is called...
I'm excited.
The Stud Club.
I'll tell you what theirs is
Ours
called.
Ours is called the Stud Club.
Let me read the passage.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, dear, Lily said weakly. Sorry, weakly. Oh, dear. Lily said weakly. Her head sank to the table again. Don't tell me. This has to do with that absurd club Leo started. With the horse. Yes. What a ridiculous name he gave it. The Stud Club. I told him. He should have asked me for ideas. I could think of a dozen better things to call it. What's wrong with the Stallion Society? Amelia bit back a laugh. So this is a club that the Duke of Moreland, the Midnight Duke, and Ashbury, the sort of like brutish...
emo MCR dude.
Yeah,
isn't
MCR
dude.
Ashworth?
Ashworth, yes.
I like Ashbury better. And, Tanner's improving the book.
Who's the last guy?
Bellamy.
Bellamy.
Hellraiser.
They're the last three remaining members of the Stud Club, which is this club that co-owns a horse called Osiris that they want to stud out to do sex with
mares,
lady horses to make.
Yeah, strong. No, we all understand it actually.
The baby horses.
Yep, we got it.
They
called it the Stud Club. Obviously, that's problematic for a lot of reasons. It's something that Jack and Vanessa and I own as a club name that we're in together.
Thank you.
And then Lily suggests the Stallion, What did
society.
I say? The Stallion Society, which has an alliteration, which is nice. So, yeah, we just need to figure out what our horse club would be called.
Care for Mares.
God, that's good.
Mare Care.
Okay, mine's Green Rings Geldings.
But that's really makes it feels like you kind of own it.
Yeah, it's my club.
Green Rings Geldings does have a ring to it.
It sounds good, and it's my club. And it's like, if you, yeah, sure, if you want your lady horse to have sex with my powerful male horse.
I think it's the Mustang Gang.
Oh, I like that.
And we're the Mustang Gang. And that's unfortunately all the time we have. Well, actually, no. Vanessa, do you have anything else you want to get off your chest about this novel specifically that you wanted to say that we didn't give you an opportunity to say?
The only thing that I want to say is that this novel proves that sometimes in order to win, you have to lose.
Yeah. And that's also the point of White Man Can't Jump, the movie.
Yes. It's a spiritual sequel.
She says that to him.
Rosie Perez, I'm not going to do my impression. Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win.
Yeah. She does say that. She says it to Lord Marbury. She says, this is a spiritual sequel to White Man Can't Jump.
And she says, what is a quince?
I was young enough when I watched White Man Can't Jump that, like, when she first says that to him, because he's like, I'm going to win the basketball game. And she's like, what about our love? But when she first says that to him, I saw it in theaters. And she's like,
yeah. Who's that, Rosie
She's like,
Perez?
Sometimes when you win, you lose. And sometimes when you lose, you win. And I was like, what the fuck is she talking
about?
That
is nonsense, ma'am.
And then at the end, I was like, oh, shit. She was right the whole time. He won the basketball game, but he lost their love.
Yeah. Wow.
Like the movie really worked on me.
What about when she teaches him, sometimes when I ask you for a glass of water, I don't want a glass of water. I want you to say, I too have been thirsty.
It sounds like you two need to start
a White Men Can't Jump podcast together.
I'd be so good on that podcast.
That's a great movie.
It really is. We could just watch all of that guy's movies. What's his name? He did Tin Cup and Bull Durham.
Oh, my
God.
They're all good.
Those are all good
sports movies.
They are.
Bull Durham, my wife's favorite scene in any movie is when the I think it's Bull
the Kevin
Durham.
Costner the, monologue?
No, it's the scene.
Because I can do that for you right now, too.
Oh, my God. I need to hear it.
When does it start?
You put yourself on the spot.
Wait, how does it start? No. As long as I can get the first line, I can do the whole thing. It goes, I believe in real grass, not AstroTurf, right? I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe in opening presents on Christmas morning and not Christmas Eve. And I believe in long, slow, deep kisses that last 3 days. It's not the whole one, though.
Wow.
It's not the whole thing.
That's impressive.
Still impressive, honestly.
My wife's favorite part in the movie is they all, like, all the guys go up to the pitcher's mound to have a conversation about,
candlesticks are always a great present.
And instead they're just like gossiping. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's lovely.
So
too.
Tanner, do you want to do a quick speech before we leave?
From one of these sports movies by Ron Shelton. Yeah, I'll do one. Let me look something up real quick.
This is great.
Who knew that was in my brain, all that?
That was very impressive that you just pulled that.
And here's mine.
Okay, Tanner. I'll lay a bed of music.
Nick Nolte's final monologue from Blue Chips.
Great.
Oh, I remember too much about that movie, too. The SATs are culturally biased.
Why do you know so much about this guy's movies? Ugh. Ron Shelton. You should start a Ron Shelton podcast.
And both of my listeners will be you?
You're like a super... No, I'm not going to listen to that. Jack will.
I will. Yeah, my wife and I will really eat that up.
I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf. That's how it started. And the designated hitter. He's wrong as an American League fan, but whatever.
We have to go. It's like
You can't have the pictures. You can't have the pictures. Tanner, we'll save your... You want to save your Nick Nolte thing for
another?
I'll
save it.
Yeah, we'll save it.
I'm sorry.
We're going to leave. We're also going to go. I would like to thank you, Tanner, so very much for bearing with me. I would like to thank you, Vanessa, so very much for being our fantastic guest this week. I would like to thank the Bedpots and the Sex Bugs, and I'm sorry that that's what we call you currently, for bearing with us. Please, everybody, do remember to subscribe to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/BSCC podcast. That is where we talk about the Sweet Valley Twins books. And we've also got another tier where we're talking about the second season of the Babysitters Club Netflix show. You can join our Facebook group at Baby Nation on Facebook. This week, we read a novel. The novel that we read was, of course, called One Dance with the Duke.
Yes. And it's part of a series that where the naming convention gets very clever.
Yeah.
It's like
one blank with a blank. Oh,
doing sexes blanks. With another guy.
Twice tempted
and the last one
by
is like
a rogue.
Three
Nights with a Scoundrel.
Three Nights with
a
Scoundrel.
Three Nights with a Scoundrel. Very fun.
Next week, we're going to be reading a movie novel, I think, probably, just given how timing's working out. Vanessa, where can people find you?
They should listen to Hot and Bothered. That is the best place to find me. I'm on Twitter, Vanessa M. Zoltan, and Instagram.
And you've
Vanessa
got a book.
M. Zoltan. I have a book, Praying with Jane Eyre, by me, Vanessa M. Zoltan.
Yeah, you've got to read it. Thank you so much for joining us. You are welcome back anytime. We really love having
thank
you on the show this
me?
Week.
Whenever you talk about Bull Durham.
Vanessa.
Yeah, Tanner has to be back every time.
Sorry, Tanner.
I thought I was finally being released from this purgatory.
This week, I have been Jack Alexander Shepherd.
My name is Tanner. Vanessa, you can go.
I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
No, you could just do the outro, Tanner.
Oh, I do the outro.
Yeah, Tanner does. Tanner decided that he does the outro and
on
never,
this show,
literally
and then
never
I always
remembers.
Forget.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
I dressed myself.
That's generous.
And I should say we're the Mustang Gang.
Yeah.
Jack tore his gaze away. He had spent entirely too much time.
Can you put Vanessa in this too?
Yes. Jack and Tanner tore their Jack and Vanessa tore their gaze away. They had spent entirely too much time looking at Tanner this evening, and they couldn't bear to see him humanized any further. Far safer to hold their demonized version, arrogant, cold, horse mad, easy to detest.
You want me to know about Dinosaur Train and roll with that, and you won't roll with my Foo Fighters deep cut? Fine.
I did watch a Foo Fighters documentary that I found extremely compelling. It was very interesting.
They are so charming.
They're so charming, but they have this like weird backstory where they like kicked out the guy from Sunny Day Real Estate and like...
But like by accident.
It's like this bitter... It's just very bitter. It was like Dave Grohl. I like understand both sides of it.
You guys want to save this for your Foo Fighters
as a control freak? But like Dave Grohl went and like recorded over all of his drum tracks like piece by piece.
But he was told to by that producer. Yeah. And
that's
the other
brutal,
guy wasn't
though.
Answering the phone.
But if that's your
saying.
Whole, if your whole thing is you're a drummer and then like Dave Grohl redoes your shit, like.
But Dave Grohl's
a drummer.
I don't know.
He was a drummer in Nirvana. It's
imagine
not like
imagine if you recorded a podcast and then your co-host went and like did all your bits themselves and then you
it
heard
was,
it
was
and it's like
sensitive.
This is just a monologue.
Four cell phones. Not gonna look, Dave and I have argued about this before.
Okay.
I'm not gonna
You're
argue about
Dave's
it with
side.
You, Jack.
Yeah. Okay,
I am on
enough.
Dave's side. He's married to a woman from the San Fernando Valley and as a fellow Valley girl.
Okay.
It's like he married me. Dave calls my husband.
I'm also a big Sunny Day Real Estate fan. So like that I'd like,
you're torn.
I was, when I first heard about the Foo Fighters, I was like, holy shit, that's the Sunny Day Real Estate rhythm section. So when that, the Sunny Day Real Estate part of that just like completely fell apart, that hurt my heart a little bit.
That was your first reaction. It's not, holy shit, it's the guys from Nirvana.
No, yeah.
I know. You know the rest of the world has a different version of that, right?
Okay, let's get back into it. We like to count again, if that's all right. Tanner, are you recording?
Oh my God, this isn't going in. My Foo Fighters gold, fine.
It may end up in the outro, but I guess we'll see.